Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. With the news agenda dominated by the general election and the recent tragedy at Grenfell Tower, it would be easy to forget that Theresa May is set to begin the UK's crucial Brexit negotiations tomorrow. The Prime Minister is famous for saying that no deal is better than a bad deal, but her Chancellor, Philip Hammond, told Andrew Marr that no deal would be a very, very bad outcome.
Do you think that no deal is better than a bad deal?
Let me be clear that no deal would be a very, very bad outcome for Britain. But there is a possible worse outcome, and that is a deal that is deliberately structured to punish us, to suck the lifeblood out of our economy over a period of time. And I would not agree to a deal that was clearly structured and designed to destroy us by slow bites over a long period of time. That's not acceptable. And
Hammond went on to lament the content of the Conservatives' general election campaign, from which he had been sidelined by the Prime Minister.
When you saw the exit poll on election night, it must have been a bittersweet moment. You knew you probably lost your overall majority, but you knew you were going to keep your job, because if Theresa May had got a big majority, she'd have fired you as Chancellor.
You're much too Machiavellian, Andrew. My reaction was bitter, nothing sweet about it. I was shocked, as I think everybody else was. That wasn't the feeling that I had got from travelling round the entire country over the election period.
We didn't see much of you during the election campaign.
You're
and
right.
As I said, the Prime Minister was planning to sack you, apparently. Did you have a conversation with her? You said, well, I'm still here. Are you going to get rid of me? What did you say to her?
Well, I'm not going to repeat to you the private conversation that I had with Theresa May on Friday. Yet it's true that my role in the election campaign was not the one I would have liked it to be. I did a lot of travelling around
the
country.
Why was that, do you think?
I met lots of very interesting people. I heard lots of interesting stories. Look, I would have liked to have made much more of our economic record, which I think is an excellent one, creating 2.9 million new jobs, getting the deficit down by three quarters.
Was this Nick Timothy and Fiona Hill keeping you off the airwaves?
Well, I'm not going to speculate about what happened inside the campaign leadership team. The end result is that, in my judgment, we didn't talk about the economy as much as we should have done. We didn't.
And do you think Theresa May recognises that was a mistake
now? We didn't put enough energy into dismantling Jeremy Corbyn's economic proposals and his spending plans, which would be catastrophic for this country. And we will now do that. We will now address those plans that Corbyn set out in his manifesto and take them apart, which I would have liked to have done during the campaign.
Hammond's comments on Brexit have caused something of a stir, but Shadow Brexit Secretary Keir Starmer has also raised a few eyebrows by signalling that a Labour government might keep the UK in the EU customs union.
Would you sacrifice control over freedom of movement in order to stay inside the single, or have very good access to the single market?
It's clear that freedom of movement will end when we leave the EU, and therefore the discussion we're having is what model fits with changes to freedom of movement plus the trade that we need.
So you could have some freedom of movement remaining.
Well, I don't understand this notion of some freedom of movement. In the end, immigration comes down to...
You sound like, in a very gentle way, you're saying exactly what Theresa May would say if she was sitting there.
No, Theresa May has taken the wrong approach. The tone and approach is completely wrong. I say we can't have membership because that was decided last year. We can have partnership if we change the tone and approach.
Okay.
We need to be much clearer about
that's,
the benefits
that's tone,
of the single
that's
market.
That's tone and words.
But
on the actual clear... Well, let me try one other thing. Customs union, in or out?
Well, I think that should be left on the table.
So we could stay inside the customs
union? Yes.
Well, that is the single biggest difference between you and the Conservative
Party. But there's also this notion of no deal being a viable deal, which Theresa May and the government have repeatedly said. No deal is what happens if you get to the end of the 2 years and you haven't been able to reach agreement. You're pushed over the cliff. To say I'll jump over the cliff isn't a negotiating stance that makes much sense.
The terrible fire at Grenfell Tower has dominated much of this week's news coverage. Earlier in the week, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn said that nearby vacant properties should be requisitioned by the government in order to house the survivors of the fire. He repeated his controversial comments to ITV's Robert Peston.
You made a statement that some people think was controversial, which is that the vacant properties in the area should be appropriated. How would that work in practice?
Well, I don't think it's very controversial at all.
Some thought it was controversial.
Well, some people. I'm not blaming you for that. There are a large number of deliberately kept vacant flats and properties all over London. It's called land banking. people with a lot of money buy a house, buy a flat, keep it empty.
But you would seize it forever or just take it for as long as they're needed? I'm just looking at the mechanism.
Occupy it, compulsory purchase it, requisition it. There's a lot of things you can do. But can't we as a society just think, all of us? It's all very well putting our arms around people during the crisis, but homelessness is rising, the housing crisis is getting worse, and my point was quite a simple one. In an emergency, you have to bring all assets to the table in order to deal with that crisis, and that is what I think we should be doing in this case.
Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell elaborated on Corbyn's proposals to Sky's Sophie Ridge. He told Ridge that the government already had the powers to put Corbyn's plan into action.
I'm interested to talk now about Labour's reaction to it, because Jeremy Corbyn has called for properties in Kensington and Chelsea to be requisitioned. Now, what you're talking about here is some of the most expensive properties in London. I mean, this would cost hundreds of millions of pounds. So I put it to you that you're not making serious policy proposals here. You're playing to the crowd.
No, what's happened is, and we've been saying this for a long period of time, organisations like Shelter as well are trying to point out the obscenity of the housing crisis that we've got, the overcrowding, poor housing that we've got, particularly in our capital city. And at the same time as that, you have properties standing empty for long periods of time. In addition to that, in London, we're blighted by the fact that we have overseas developers buying properties up and actually leaving them empty on many occasions.
But these are different issues here. You're talking about the wider housing issues. You're not talking about what Jeremy Corbyn called for, which is to immediately requisition these properties.
Sophie, they are linked. They are linked. People would not be living in high-rise blocks, unsafe conditions, and some of them very poor quality, if we didn't have the housing crisis. And part of that housing crisis is as a result of allowing housing, particularly in London, to be used for speculative gain rather than housing need. Now, what Jeremy said is if we've got a crisis like that, we need urgent measures. And if there are empty properties nearby, they should be used. And councils have the power to do that already.
Through compulsory purchase,
if necessary,
which would take weeks.
It
wouldn't help, would it?
You can use the existing law extremely fast. But it does point to
By law, the owners must be notified, given 21 days to raise objections. Then there's another 14 days
Any court in emergency measures, as we saw in wartime periods as well, you can requisition properties. You will need powers to do it. We've got those powers. If necessary, I would have convened Parliament immediately to, if necessary, push new legislation through within 24 hours, if that was necessary. We cannot be in a situation where you have people who have lost their homes and we're struggling to find alternative accommodation.
No one would disagree with
that. And then you have properties standing empty.
No one would disagree, of course, with the need to rehouse people as quickly as possible. But my point is more about whether requisitioning property is the best way to do it. When, for example, hotel rooms could be cheaper, perhaps not as popular, but
if you look at what happened in some of the hotel rooms as well, people didn't feel comfortable in those. We saw one example of the council moving one gentleman into accommodation for older people, which was completely inappropriate and unsuitable to him. I tell you, I would have done whatever necessary to house those families for what they've been through. And if that need requisition in local properties, yes, if necessary, because they suffered so much.
And finally, the new leader of the House of Commons, Andrea Leadsom, told the BBC's Nick Robinson about why the government plans to forego the Queen's speech next year.
It happened in 2005 and in 2010.
It didn't happen in the war, it's not happened in other crises.
Yes, but it's not so much crises as the weight of legislation. There's a lot of legislation to be gone through, and we're leaving the EU at the end of March 2019, and so having a two-year period in which to bring together Parliament and government to really make progress with legislation that's essential to making a real success of Brexit, there are some big advantages. It's all a bit technical, but as you all know, Nick, select committees don't have to ditch inquiries, bills don't have to be carried forward, there will be more parliamentary time for scrutiny.
Well, the other big advantage is this, isn't it? Which is you don't have to risk another Queen's speech, which you might lose. In other words, having 2 years makes it just a little bit easier for the government to survive than it might otherwise be.
Yeah, I want to be really clear here. That is absolutely not any reason for doing this. There are plenty of opportunities if you want to, speculate on problems for the government. The point about this two-year parliament is that it enables us to get the work of leaving the EU done, but at the same time we have a big social domestic legislative programme to really try and tackle some of the issues of inequality, some of the issues of lack of opportunity, and we really want to have a good run at that at this difficult time to absolutely make the most of it.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes Store, and for the chance to receive a special introductory offer of 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as full online access, just visit spectator.co.uk/subscribe.